Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us on IllegalCurve.com and YouTube.com and our Illegal Curve channel, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Zoomcast, better known as the Curvecast, alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We'll be with you talking about everything going on in the world of hockey. A very actually busy couple of days, not so much on the Winnipeg Jets front. All is quiet on the Winnipeg Jets front as the players have not yet returned to Winnipeg in order to get ready for the training camp, which is allegedly going to begin in the next 15 or so days. But all throughout the other parts of the hockey world, it has been a busy week or so. Ezra, Dave, good evening to you both. Nice to see you. David, of course, we have to start with today's big news, of course, the large victory for the House of Ashkenazi in our softball game earlier tonight.
Yeah, my dad made the big play, posted on Twitter. Not bad for guys over 70. Stretched out, made the snag. Was very happy with himself and helped the team get to victory. So it was an important play.
A 2-0 I played start with your dad, Dave. He can move. He can still move. He's a really good pitcher. Good hitter, too. And I'm sure he hasn't lost a step.
No. And the best news about it is when he dove and hit the ground is he got back up. There was some concern
there
for a little
while.
That
was our concern. That was the concern.
You can always hit the ground. It's can you get up from hitting the ground? But Dave's dad, Gary, is a stalwart defensive player and of course, a lethal weapon at the bottom of our order. And the House of Ashkenazi off to a 2-0 start in our softball season. That's, of course,
a fantastic lawyer as well.
I suppose we can talk about his legal profession as well. Who cares about that?
He needs some legal help. States, wills, real estate.
There you go. Dave giving a nice plug there for the legal business.
MMG.
There you go. Let's talk, though, about the real reason people are listening to this. It's not about our softball team, believe it or not. It's about hockey. And a newsy Thursday night, Elliot Friedman, of course, coming out with some news earlier tonight, maybe about 30 minutes ago, maybe about an hour ago, talking about some of the negotiations that are set to take place between the NHL and the NHLPA. And I'll break it down as quickly as I can and as easily as I can. So as we know, the return to play, which of course is the hub city agreement and the play-in games and the playoffs and everything along those lines, the return to play and an extension to the NHL and NHLPA collective bargaining agreement are going to be tied into one vote. All 700 members of the NHLPA, 700 plus members of the NHLPA, will get a vote on the on those two items. And it's one vote. It's not two separate votes. It is one vote. And it's a simple majority. 50% plus one means if they get that, that means they're going to go forward with it. Some of the details that are of most interest so far, and I'm sure there's going to be more, but what Elliot Friedman was reporting earlier tonight regarding the new or an extension to the collective bargaining agreement is that escrow, which we know is a big concern for players, is going to be capped this season at 20%. There was some fear that it could get as high as 35% if the NHL did not actually return to play. And even if it did return to play, there was some concern it was going to be around 27, 28%. So there'd be an agreement that it would be capped at 20%. Next season, presumably next season, it is at least one season, you will see a 10% salary deferral by each and every player in the NHL. They won't lose the money. They just won't get paid the money that year. They'll get paid the money a different year down the road. For example, let's take a guy like who's making $1 million next season. He would not get $1 million. He'd get $900,000 and be owed $100,000 somewhere down the road, a 10% salary deferral. The salary cap would be stagnant for the next three seasons. 81.5. Pardon me? Yeah, that's the really big one, is that the salary cap would be stagnant at $81.5 million for next season, the season after, and the third season. But I think there's some wiggle room in that third year. If the revenue bounces back, it might be able to go up by about $1 million or so three seasons from now. So if you're hitting free agency this offseason, there's not a lot of money going to be available to you because of that $81.5 million salary cap. So that's coming out earlier this evening, maybe within the last hour or 90 minutes. There's going to, of course, be more information on that front over the next little while. But just your thoughts, I guess, on the NHL and the NHLPA sort of tying both the return to play agreement and the collective bargaining agreement together in one vote by the players. And you see a scenario where they don't get that 50% plus one margin for return to play.
Right. And, you know, you just mentioned it, Drew. It's that the two are tied together. We already knew that the two were going to be tied together in some form. But really, if you think about it, this is setting the stage, if the stage hasn't already been set, for the next labor war between the NHL and the NHLPA. And it looked like, you know, maybe we were going to avoid that pre, you know, March COVID-19 shutting the season down temporarily. Looks like Mikey McIntyre of the Free Press is going to join us. But, you know, I think we know how Ryan Kessler and Artemi Panarin are going to vote. Ryan Kessler has been very vocal supporting what Artemi Panarin put out on Twitter about, I think it was about an hour and a half ago, basically saying that, you know, the NHLPA should, you know, stop with this escrow. And he doesn't think that, you know, the players should agree to this. So, you know, it's pretty amazing when, you know, a Hart Trophy candidate is coming out on Twitter right before the NHLPA is going to vote on this. So I don't know, guys, this kind of puts a new, you know, twist in this entire saga here.
Dave, before I get to comment on that, I want to welcome to the Illegal Curve Zoomcast, the Curve cast, if you will, our good friend from the Winnipeg Free Press. You know him as the Free Press columnist. He, of course, covers the Winnipeg Jets as well. Mike McIntyre, welcome to the show. How are you on this Thursday evening, Mike?
I am very good, guys. I should... There we go.
There, we go.
There you go.
There we go.
This isn't radio, right? You want to see my...
Yeah, we need to see your face, Mike. Come on.
My radio face, exactly. Good to be here, guys. Jumping in, I guess, a little early.
That's okay.
Sorry about that.
No. The more the merrier. The more time with you, the better for us. We were talking about the news coming out earlier. I'm not sure if you saw the article from Elliot Friedman. What were your thoughts about that article, Mike? I mean, some interesting stuff there. We've seen some very pointed comments from Artemi Panarin earlier today on Twitter, as he referenced the response from Ryan Kessler, which was... equally critical, I suppose. It sounds like the NHLPA has got some fences that need to be mended among its personnel.
By the way, I don't know if you can hear my dog barking in the background, so I apologize for that in
advance. All good.
I think there's somebody going by our street. But, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, guys? Because it's long been believed that when they do vote on a return to play scenario, that a new CBA was going to be part of that. And that's been certainly talked about to some degree. And the idea of having some, I guess, labor unity for a long period of time, I think was going to be the icing on the cake. And yet we see clearly that there are issues that need to be resolved, and they're not simple issues either. I'm not sure how realistic it is to expect that these things are going to get sorted out just in the next few days or even the next couple of weeks. The clock is very much ticking here, of course, and so there's obviously a lot to deal with, a lot on the players' plate. And you know, I think the concerns that the players have, it's not unlike maybe what we're seeing in baseball. And I wonder how many hockey players have been watching what's going on in MLB and kind of the rift that's developed between owners and players. And a lot of people thought here in the NHL that we don't really have any of that, and yet we sort of see that maybe there's a little more to it than we thought. So for sure, I mean, this is a complicated time, right? Everybody's losing money for sure. We don't know how long the NHL may be playing without fans, and it must be very difficult right now to try and crunch the numbers really beyond the next couple of months. And even that is a difficult task. You know, one of the things the NHL had going for it that MLB didn't was that the players got paid for the most part for most of this season. They got their money. And, you know, I think a lot of people wondered, well, what's going to happen if we get to the 2020-2021 season and there's still no fans allowed in most markets? What could that do potentially to the salary structure and to revenues? So maybe we're getting a little bit of a taste of that. I do think, though, at the end of the day, there's just too much at stake here, guys, for all the parties not to find some common ground, not to find a way to make this work. I mean, I don't think anybody wants to see a repeat of what we just saw happen in MLB, where they basically frittered away, I'd say, probably a month of time that they could have played that is going to cost everybody. And really, nobody wins in the end when that happens.
Well, you know, it's funny. I also saw a tweet from Alan Walsh, and it was embedded in Elliot Friedman's article, because Alan has blocked me on Twitter for something I must have said one day. But Alan blocks everybody, so I'm not too offended. But
I blocked you, Drew. So we're in the same.
There you go.
Not me.
Not you. You're still safe, Dave. Mike, are you good with Alan still?
I am. Yes. I've actually never interviewed him before.
Yeah.
Of course, known to Jets fans as Andrei Pavlik's agent. Does he have, I don't know, does he have any current Jets? I don't think so. He might have somebody.
Nothing, nobody jumps to mind, but because he's usually quite vocal about his, about advocating for his players on Twitter. So I think he has a lot of something.
He has a lot of the Slovakian players, because like, I think he was Michael Frolik's agent as well. And I think he maybe had some other Jets in the past, but you're right. I don't know that he has his agency, because he's part of a bigger agency, right? Octagon. Octagon may have some Jets clients, but Alan Walsh is, he's one of the more vocal agents, that's for sure.
Well, and that's what he was saying on Twitter tonight, is he's saying that he was, you know, pointing to the tweet from Panarin, and he's pointing to some other comments, and he's saying, you know, time and time again, the owners win when the NHLPA has fractures. And that's what we're seeing a little bit, because you have a guy like Panarin who has, I think he's due to make $14 million next season. And he's being asked to, of course, there's going to be the escrow, and he's going to be asked to defer 10% of his salary. And there's the players who have existing contracts who want to keep, who don't mind the salary cap being low because it keeps their escrow low. And then you have the guys who are hitting unrestricted free agency next year who want it to be, who want the salary cap to be as high as possible so that they can earn as much money as they can. And it's obviously those two things are incongruent. And the owners are the ones who, at the end of the day, reap the benefits of a fractured NHLPA.
For sure. And I'm not suggesting that there's any fracture here between the example I'm about to give, but I think it's an interesting one to look at. A year ago, we came into training camp, Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor were in the same boat, right? They both needed new deals. They were coming off their ELCs. And we know how that played out. Kyle Connor signed the long-term deal. He gets paid, obviously. Whereas Patrick Laine kind of bet on himself. And the belief was that there would be a bigger pot of gold awaiting Patrick Laine in a couple of years. And certainly he had a very productive season, I think, up to the point of the pause in mid-March. He really had developed, I think, as a more well-rounded player. But if you're Patrick Laine and his agent, you must be wondering now, my goodness, what is waiting for us in another year from now? Maybe the route Kyle Connor took is the better one. And again, if you're Kyle Connor, you have your money. You were content with the deal that you took. And so you're right. I mean, it does create a potential divide where the comfortable players, I guess, with the big money, long-term deals, they may be asked here to kind of sacrifice to a degree to help their peers out who have the next big deal still to come. And it does create a very interesting delay, I guess, and maybe in some cases a divide for sure.
Yeah, I got a question about the – sorry, I was just going to jump in here, Drew, and ask Mike about, you know, the developments, you know, with the hub cities, Vancouver. I know that
– they're out of there.
They're out. They're gone. Five cities left.
Five cities left. And the question I wanted to ask Mike, Drew, was, you know, the reason that they're out seems like a reason that they should be in. And, you know, when you talk about Edmonton and Toronto, obviously, you know, both of those cities with – their facilities and hotels and everything like that, they would be fine hub cities. But how surprised were you to see that because of what the BC Health Authority was saying in terms of, you know, if NHL players test positive for COVID-19 and they're asymptomatic, they wouldn't be able to return. Whereas in Ontario and Alberta, those provincial health authorities are saying, no, that's fine. You know, if one or two players, you know, test positive for COVID-19, they could, the series could actually continue. I mean, to me, that's going to create all types of, you know, problems, you know, if we do see a bunch of players test positive once this thing gets going, because we've already seen 11 players test positive, including Austin Matthews, Mike, and I know you wrote about it in your column for the Free Press. It seems like, you know, after that news came out last week, the NHL just kept moving forward as if nothing ever happened.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'll say this. I believe it's Dr. Henry, right, in British Columbia. Yeah. Good on her. Kudos to her for not just bowing to the almighty NHL and you know, compromising, I guess, the integrity or the sanctity of the health and safety of BC residents just to appease the masters of the NHL. I mean, it blows my mind, guys, that the very thing that made a place like Vancouver a great place to be a hub city, that the NHL would now come in and say, actually, we want you to change this and this and this and this, which would make you less attractive, I would think. So, you know, to places, I guess, that are willing to play by a different set of rules. I mean, I think that's what we've seen in this whole pandemic, right? That whether it's different U.S. states, certainly it's very dramatic in some examples. Or here in Canada, we see what we've been able to do in Manitoba versus, say, Ontario and Quebec. You know, I think if I'm in a province or a state that has a real heavy caseload, I'd be looking to what those that don't have done and trying to emulate them. So I'm not sure why the NHL feels they can just come in here and try to change the rules kind of mid-game. So yeah, Vancouver, I guess, loses out, but to me, they actually win because if those are going to be the parameters, I'm not sure you want that in your neck of the woods. And I also wonder, guys, like if you're an NHL player, even if a teammate or an opponent is asymptomatic, do you really want them still around you? Like, is that something the players want? I would think you'd want to isolate that player and keep them as far away as possible, not allow them to keep playing if they're asymptomatic. To me, you're just asking for an outbreak. And we've seen that. I mean, look what happened in Tampa Bay, of course, with their facility. We're certainly seeing it. Look at Clemson, the college football team. I think they had 23 positives.
Yeah,
I know some of you guys, you follow wrestling a little bit. I do as well. The WWE now has a big outbreak all of a sudden. So, I mean, these things can spread quickly. And sure, most of these athletes are probably going to weather the storm fairly well and come through it relatively unscathed. But it just seems to me that if you do have a positive case, get that player out of here, get him isolated, get him recovered, and then bring him back in if you need be. The idea that you would allow players to keep playing despite a positive test just because they're not displaying overt symptoms to me is ludicrous. So, you know, we're down to five. I think we can probably all agree Vegas, the NHL wants Vegas. There's no question about that. And so, you know, the idea being Vegas and probably a Canadian city, and I guess maybe flip a coin. I would think, guys, that Toronto, for a lot of reasons, being an east-west kind of scenario, eastern time zone, I know the NHL has said that's not sort of do or die here, that they could make do with, say, two western teams in terms of the staggering game times. I still think Toronto, they're going to have to find a reason to exclude Toronto. I think it will be Toronto, but certainly Edmonton has put a big push on here, of course, trying to bring the NHL in. So, and you know, if you've seen some of the details of what they're proposing, it's got to be somewhat attractive to players, right? The idea of like high-end restaurants that they've secured and golf courses that the players would have. So it's an attractive option for sure. You just wonder how close we are to a decision. And as what we've already talked about, there's other issues here that have to get worked out as well. And it seems like we've already kicked this down the road a little bit longer than people thought. Who knows how much longer, but the clock is ticking, right? Training camps are supposed to be starting in 2 weeks from now. And you wonder if that's going to get delayed.
Mike McIntyre is our guest on the Illegal Curve Zoomcast. You're also listening possibly on YouTube, if that's the avenue you chose. Mike, of course, is a columnist for the Winnipeg Free Press, covers the Winnipeg Jets. Good friend of the program, as they do say.
Mike, got to ask you about, speaking of training camps, Jets are supposed to start one, you know, and it's interesting because you see all these teams like Pittsburgh, they've got players there. They've got, you know, we're seeing obviously Tampa Bay. Right. But we're not hearing about any Winnipeg guys in Winnipeg. And so, you know, especially if they're supposed to return here, as of right now, especially if they're coming from elsewhere, they'd have to self-quarantine. So we know the talk was they were really supposed to be here basically now,
right,
in order for training camp to get underway. You know, and I suspect that they're waiting for some special exemption to allow them to do it so they don't have to necessarily. But, like, what do you think this is going to look like? Because, you know, the Jets haven't – I mean, when Kevin Cheveldayoff spoke maybe 3 weeks ago, I can't remember exactly when, he said they weren't looking at the States as of that moment to hold a training camp. So, I mean, we're not that far away. It's 2 weeks away. You just mentioned it. So what is that going to look like for the Winnipeg Jets?
Yeah, so, Dave, I actually wrote a piece earlier today that
it'll be in
tomorrow's Free Press. I wrote a column, but basically kind of what you just outlined, the fact I confirmed today, there is still not a single, as of June 25th, there's not a single Winnipeg Jet in Winnipeg. Zero. None of them have come back. Of course, right now, the only ones who could come back without a quarantine are the guys in Western Canada or Northwestern Ontario, because Manitoba, of course, as of last weekend, so guys like Josh Morrissey, Adam as well, but those guys are still all out at their off-season homes. None of them have come back. But the bigger date to me is June 26, aka Friday, because that is exactly 2 weeks out from camp. And if the 14-day quarantine is put into place, that's the date that all of these guys should have been back in Winnipeg to start serving their 14-day of days of isolation to be ready for camp. The fact that they're not tells me one of two things, guys. Either the Jets and other Canadian teams have already been told that there will be an exemption granted, not unlike what we've seen the NHL say they would do with a hub city, right, where they would create a new rule basically for NHL players in one of these hubs. The government has not stated explicitly that there'd be such an exemption for Canadian teams for training camp. But I have to think that either teams like the Jets know that that's coming, or B, if they don't know that's coming, then they absolutely must be making plans to potentially move camp to the US, because I mean, if they're not, why aren't these players back now? They'd have to be back. It's like a game of chicken that they're basically playing with the government. And if you lose that game of chicken, well, what's the end result? July 10th comes around and 3/4 of your team are in their homes in Winnipeg serving their quarantine. So, you know, I don't know the answer to which one of those scenarios. I do think that perhaps the government has indicated, or they're banking on some kind of exemption coming here, but they better be sure that they're right about that, or like you said, maybe we do see them look to the States for their training camp, which again to me would just be ridiculous. Winnipeg should be the safest place to hold a training camp in any NHL city, and the fact that you'd actually have to look to the US because you don't want to inconvenience your players, I mean, these guys could have already got this out of the way, right? They could have come back weeks ago. They could have done their quarantine. They could have been skating here as part of phase two. Phase two, of course, was much ado about nothing in Winnipeg. There is no phase two because there's no players here. It's a bit of a tree falls in a forest scenario.
Well, you know, it's funny. I don't know if I was saying it to Dave and Ezzy or if I was saying it to somebody else, but Winnipeg in June and July is where I'd want to be. I mean, it's a nice place in June or July. Never mind being down in Florida, you know, where you get COVID when you step outside on the sidewalk.
Right.
You imagine, you know, you play in Winnipeg all winter long, and then you leave when it's nice, and there's basically, you know, what do we have, 14 active cases of COVID, and you're flying to Florida where it's humid and it's muggy, and you're, like I said, it's just a cesspool of disease right now.
Yeah, I mean, so let's use Blake Wheeler as an example, not to pick on Blake Wheeler, and I get why in March or early April – he probably thought, yeah, let's get out of Winnipeg for a while. It's still cold. There's snow on the ground. Let's go down to Florida for a bit, which he did. But at some point you think, maybe we should get back up there because, you know, this is going to start. And again, he could have got his quarantine out of the way. And yeah, it's pretty nice around here in the summertime, right? So yeah. I get maybe why you'd want to avoid this place in the dark of winter. But so, you know, the Jets, and not just the Jets, other Canadian teams. I saw Montreal, they're in a similar situation. The Canadians don't have many players at all in Montreal right now. A lot of them are in the U.S. or Europe. And so they're in that same boat potentially, right, where you paint yourself into a corner that you better know that quarantine is going to be waived or exempted, or else how are you having training camp in 2 weeks from now? And, you know, so we haven't seen an exodus of players here returning to Winnipeg, which tells me that there's more going on behind the scenes. By the way, guys, I asked the Jets today just if we could get some clarity on just what training camp might actually look like around here. And it's interesting. The response I got from the Jets was, I think the term they used was, there's so many balls in the air right now that we don't really know what's going to happen here. So in a lot of ways, teams, I think, they're waiting to see what the NHL and obviously the NHL Players Association decide, which is why time really should be of the essence.
Well, do you so speaking of time, and we know that the July 10th, July 11th date is rapidly approaching. Right. Do you think that gets extended? Do you think that that date gets moved? I mean, with everything you hear, and you hear about the positive tests and the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I mean, Austin Matthews, yeah, the most important player in the most in the biggest Canadian market, you know, one of the NHL poster boys getting testing positive. Do you think that date ends up moving, or do you think that they're hell-bent on starting it on the 10th and 11th?
Well, I think they really want to start it then, but I'm starting to wonder how that's going to happen. I mean, unless we get just an absolute avalanche of news here, and, you know, what we talked about earlier, like Artemi Panarin's tweet and stuff, kind of throws another wrench potentially into the process, especially if you believe that a CBA extension is kind of being tied in with all of this. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you get all these issues settled and get all that done. We've certainly heard rumblings that some players are a little more hesitant than others. You know, really, and good on them for having questions and having concerns. They really ought to. I'll say this though, guys. I mean, to me, the 11 positive tests, and that was the number the NHL released, 11 out of approximately 200 that have been tested under this phase two, since that began in early June, I don't know that that in and of itself, or what happened with Tampa or Austin Matthews, that those in and of itself are enough to sink the process. If anything, I think the NHL and the players would look at those positive results and say, this is why we need to have a bubble. This is why we need to have real strict measures in place. Because if we don't, if we're having players just kind of being part of the community as they are right now under this phase two, these guys are not in isolation. They're still going to restaurants and golf courses and probably swimming pools and you name it, patios. So of course they're going to be a reflection of society, and what's happening in the US in a lot of cases is the cases are soaring. So we shouldn't be all that surprised that NHL players have gotten COVID. Mm-hmm. But I think it does serve as a reminder of why you need a strict protocol in place to really create your own environment here. And what that exactly is going to look like, I mean, remains to be seen. We can probably look to the NBA model a little bit, guys. The 113-page protocol that they've released, I would expect the NHL is going to use a lot of those. I mean, they're not going to Disney, obviously, but there will be a lot of those protocols, I think, that'll be very similar. And, you know, one thing that I'm curious about, just as a journalist who obviously covers the league, is are we going to be able to cover these games in person? Are we covering them like this, you know, on Zoom?
Join us for the Zoom post-game show.
Exactly. You know, will we be able to get inside the bubble? Will we be just outside it? Will it be more like those last few days of the season in March, just before the pause, where they had we weren't allowed into the dressing rooms and they were creating sort of a buffer zone where players were coming to the podium? I mean, there's a lot of ways this could go. And obviously, you know, I'm waiting to kind of see how it plays out and whether or not I'm going to get to cover some Jets playoff action in person or have to do it online.
Mike McIntyre is our guest on the Illegal Curve Zoomcast. You know, Mike, of course, is a columnist with the Winnipeg Free Press. He covers the Jets. He's a good friend of our program. Mike, if you need, when you need to jump off, or if and or when you need to jump off, just let us know.
No plans, guys.
Okay, 10 o'clock on a Thursday night.
We're doing it. We're going all the way.
There you go.
So, Mike, I was just going to jump in there and you know, sticking on the topic of, you know, journalism. You know, I listened to the Jet Cetera podcast that you did with Free Press editor Steve Lyons.
You're our listener.
I'm just one fan, Mike. I always have been.
You and my mom, actually.
No, but I mean, I heard you guys, you know, among other things, you guys were talking about, you know, return to play and the Austin Matthews situation. And what I wanted to ask you about was, you know, specifically, you know, Steve Simmons, we all know he was the one that reported, you know, that it was Austin Matthews for the Toronto Sun. And right, you mentioned the Ed Willis column, Ed Willis, of course, in Vancouver, former Winnipeg Sun reporter. And, he, you know, his column, you know, I know we've all read it and, you know, talking about how weird it is that still other major media outlets have not reported on it, even though, you know, TSN reported that Ezekiel Elliott, you know, tested positive for COVID-19. So that whole anonymity, you know, argument as the reason why TSN and the other network haven't mentioned it seems to not really apply here. But I mean, what do you think this says about this whole process? Because, you know, we talked about, you know, return to play, it seems like it's kind of crumbling right now with, you know, these positive cases and, you know, the NHL looking like they have a little bit of a, you know, labor mess on their hands here. But, I mean, why do you think it is that we still haven't heard, you know, TSN, for example, you know, mentioning that it's Auston Matthews? Because clearly, I think people would want to know that, as Drew mentioned, one of the best players in the league, you know, has this virus. I think this is important for people to know.
Absolutely. And there does seem to be a bit of a double standard when it comes to other sports. We've seen it even in the NBA. You're seeing, you know, esteemed NBA insiders, reporters, breaking news of certain basketball players that have COVID. And as far as I can tell, these aren't players who are volunteering this information. The reporters are getting it from sources, like all good reporters do. So I'm not sure why Auston Matthews should be any different, other than to say, guys, it's the center of the hockey universe, right? I think Toronto, things work a little differently in Toronto. I've never worked myself in Toronto. I've certainly been in Toronto to cover events. I covered the Raptors, of course, championship final last June, which was an absolute dream come true for me. And of course, I've covered Jets games in Toronto, and you see just the media, just the overwhelming number of media that are there. There's no question a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs wield a lot of power, a lot of clout. And I'm sure that they weren't very happy that news leaked out. It didn't come from them, at least not in an official way, that their star player had COVID. And so, you know, you get the sense that other journalists are kind of just playing ball right now with the Leafs. And to me, and I think Ed Willis nailed it with his column, that's a bit of a slippery slope, right? That we're already seeing more and more of the team controlling the message when it comes to pro sports. Not just hockey, but all sports. But, you know, hockey's the sport we know best and we all cover. You're seeing that more and more. And I don't think that independent journalists ought to be, you know, compromising their own morals to just go along with the team message. That's a dangerous game to be playing. So I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised, if that makes any sense, that everybody else kind of went quiet. I mean, good on Steve Simmons. That's a great scoop. And nobody's denied his story. So, you know, and you can bet that if it was incorrect, the Leafs would have been out in front of it to say that's not the case. So, yeah, I guess it just tells us a little bit about a couple of things. The way teams, and especially a team like the Leafs, try and control the message, and the way, you know, the sports industry, journalism, often goes along with that, and why that's not a very good thing.
So is it safe to say, Mike, that if a Jets player tests positive and you become aware of that, that's not something that's going to be censored in the free press?
No, I mean, and I should clarify, as long as it's not violating some kind of, you know, if there was an actual provision in law that said you can't, you know, I covered the crime and justice beat for 20 years. There was all kinds of things that I wouldn't put in print, that I couldn't put in print, because of various, you know, orders and stuff. So my understanding is there's no health order. There's no personal health order that would exempt somebody from reporting Auston Matthews has COVID. If there was, then absolutely. I mean, you have to play by those rules. I wouldn't be suggesting somebody say to heck with that and go and do it. But yeah, I mean, if there's nothing legally stopping you, then absolutely. To me, it's a huge story, right? And if you're weighing it, whether it's newsworthy, whether it has news value, I don't know how you could argue that, you know, the superstar player in the biggest market in the league, that's a pretty newsworthy development as we look to return to play here.
Mike McIntyre, sorry, Dave, go ahead. I was going to say Mike McIntyre, guest here on the Illegal Curve cast, talking about COVID, talking about Auston Matthews, talking about all things related to the National Hockey League, being recorded, of course, Thursday evening, the 25th of June. Go ahead, David.
Now, Mike, I know I like going to Vegas, and I know you like going to Vegas.
So I do.
The question is, do you think Vegas is going to be a fun place to cover hockey when it's 45 degrees in August?
Yeah, my goodness. I do love going to Vegas. In fact, my wife and I, we celebrated our 20th anniversary at the end of April, of course, a bit unusual circumstances. And we had a trip, guys, to Vegas at the end of May. We were supposed to be going. We had tickets.
Congratulations.
Thanks very much. We had tickets to see our all-time favorite comedian, Sebastian Maniscalco, who we've never seen in person. We were going to see him at the Wynn, and we were so looking forward to it. And, of course, that trip got canceled. The
Netflix special was good.
It was, yeah. We actually used our credit that we got from that trip. We've got another trip to Vegas booked in November. We're hoping that we'd be able to go do that belated anniversary trip then. But
Cup will be awarded, Mike.
Yeah. Looking at the schedule, I mean, November might be the off season now, actually. That might be this before the start of the next season. So it's early November we're going. So I'm hoping that it works out time-wise and obviously COVID-wise. But yeah, I mean, August, and you're right, Dave. I mean, we've heard, of course, Vegas being a favorite for a hub city. And I think there's this idea, right, that once you'd have the first couple rounds in the two hub cities, and then the common belief seems to be that you'll pinch down to just one hub city for the two semifinals, the Western and Eastern finals, and then ultimately the Stanley Cup. And it seems like Vegas is probably where that's going to happen. I saw there was a story the other day, actually, about the ice in Vegas and the ability to make good ice in the middle of summer. And that doesn't seem to be an issue, at least what the experts are saying. To me, that would be the biggest concern. Like, are these guys going to be skating on slush? And if you can guarantee that the ice is going to be of good quality, then sure. I mean, again, at the end of the day, I don't know that the hub cities matter so much, certainly not from a fan perspective. These are almost like TV studios is what these rinks are going to be, right? Mm-hmm. And as long as you could put on a good show and make it look good on television and obviously keep the players safe. The one thing Vegas, of course, has going for it, as you know, Dave, is the mega hotel complexes, and they could easily accommodate 12 NHL teams in one hotel and create an environment that I'm sure the players would absolutely love, which is why I think you keep hearing Vegas, even though the COVID numbers are a little higher than they are in a lot of other areas, there's no question players would love to be spending a few weeks or a couple months in Vegas.
I would think the ice is actually going to be better than normal. There's nobody in the arena, there's no people in the stands to heat up the building. The doors aren't opening and closing as people come and go. You can basically, control the temperature in that building and control the ice surface in that building fairly easily because there's nobody else, impacting the degrees that you can set the ice at.
What I want to know is, is Chance still going to descend from the rafters for an empty crowd? Are they still going to have the drum line and the Knights Court and all that stuff? I guess
where's Little John going to be?
Yeah.
The pomp and circumstances that hopefully stay the same. That's the least we can hope for.
Right. And let me just say, I don't know if you guys have talked about this in the past. I'm absolutely on board for enhancing the viewing experience through like adding sound in. I hope they do that. And I think they will, and there's ways you can do it. Of course, I've heard some suggestion. You almost use like the EA Sports soundtrack and you could have, the roar of the crowd obviously at the appropriate times, but I do envision you're going to have somebody like a sound engineer that's on these games, who's got a whole bunch of buttons in front of them. And depending on what's happening, they're kind of hitting the appropriate button. But to me, I mean, that's a no-brainer, right? You don't want to just hear nothing but silence. Although it would be amusing to actually hear the trash talking going on. But you might have to put the games on pay-per-view.
Yeah, mic the players up like they're doing on the PGA Tour, so you can hear every time they have a bad shot, an F-bomb gets dropped. I think our ears can handle it.
Well, Mike mentioned WWE earlier, and I don't know if anybody's caught any, WWE or, Wrestling, which is, Chris Jericho's, competitor, I guess, if you want to call that, to WWE. They're pretty new. Kenny Omega's in that one. I know Mike knows that name. But
yes.
they haven't had fans, in the stands either. So what they've done, Mike, is essentially put other wrestlers in the stands and kind of staff, affiliated with WWE. So, maybe we have a situation where, you know, players from other teams are the ones that are in the stands. So
obviously, that's why Ezzie hasn't been available on Wednesday nights. He's been in the stands for the AEW show.
Are they going to have mannequins in the stands? I mean, it's going to be empty stands. But I'm with you, Mike. They have to do something about the noise. I mean, you can't just have you know, empty arena. You're going to hear, you know, like a pin drop in there.
I've seen some soccer games where, and the comparison of just soccer with no sound, you know, other than the announcer and the natural ambiance, which isn't much, or adding in like chants and things. And it's so much better to hear it with the chants. And you're right, Ezzie, I'd love to see, let's adopt the Korean baseball and forget about mannequins. Let's put stuffed animals in the crowd. I don't know if you've seen what they've done in the KBO, but it's amazing. I think they also did something, guys, where you could actually bid or pay to have your own face somehow put on a, like a cardboard cutout in.
Yeah.
And I saw like on Twitter, some guy from, I think Brad.
Brad Schlossman from Grand Forks.
So somebody, somebody he knew?
Yeah. One of the guys from Grand Forks that he knew that had their face was like second or third row behind.
Right behind home plate. Yeah. Amazing.
Amazing.
Mike McIntyre, our guest on the Illegal Curve, a Curve cast Thursday evening. This is being recorded 10 minutes past 10 o'clock in the hour. Mike, yesterday, of course, was the announcement of the Hockey Hall of Fame, the inductees, Jerome McGinley, Marian Hossa, Kevin Lowe. I have some particular thoughts about that one. Doug Wilson, Kim St. Pierre, and then in the Builders category, Ken Holland. I got to ask you, Kevin Lowe, to me, look, all credit to him, great hockey player, won the Stanley Cup a whole bunch of times in those legendary Oilers teams. But, as Hockey Hall of Famer to me is a bridge too far in my mind.
He wasn't even the fifth or sixth best player on his own team at times on those teams. And, you know, there's a product for sure. And what was this, his 19th year of eligibility?
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of says to me when a guy, and Doug Wilson was what, year 24?
Something like that, yeah.
So when two guys get in that have been on the ballot that long, it paints the picture that it was a really weak class in terms of like new potential inductees, right? And yet you look at some guys that didn't get in on Wednesday, guys like Alexander McGillney for sure. I mean, I think you can make a very compelling case for Alex McGillney, not just for his own accomplishments, but just what he did for Russian hockey in the NHL. I'd personally make the case for Theo Fleury. I wrote a column in today's paper. To me, there's a couple of things about Theo Fleury's candidacy that jump out. Number one is that there's 15 players in NHL history to average a point a game in the regular season and the playoffs, with a minimum, I believe that's 1,000 minimum regular season games and 75 playoff games. He's one of 15 players, so that's pretty elite company. The other 14 are in the Hall of Fame. Theo Fleury is not. I think the other thing going for Theo Fleury, he did it while he was 5'6", right? He was one of the smallest players in the league. And more than anything to me, guys, and his candidacy, the more we've learned about what he experienced in his life and what he was going through at times, even in the midst of his career, when he was still performing at a very high level. To me, it just paints it all in a whole new light that he was able to still persevere and at times excel despite the many hardships. Yes, some of them were self-inflicted, but I think you look overall at the hand he was dealt in life from an early age growing up in Russell, to obviously Graham James and the abuse inflicted on him and others, to the addiction and whatnot. So to me, this was the year I thought that Theo Fleury gets in. And the fact that Kevin Lowe and Doug Wilson get in tells me that the door was wide open. And I guess the biggest issue I have, guys, I mean, of course, we'll always be able to nitpick, and that's fine. That's fun. That's part of, I think, why we love sports, is these debates. I just wish there was a little more transparency to the selection committee. Amen. These are 18 guys. I guess to their credit, it's not the same 18 every year. Like, there's constant movement. So, you know, I guess that is one way to address that. it's just them voting their buddies in or guys they like and keeping guys they don't like out, because that's always the concern. And especially with someone like Theo Fleury, who, let's face it, he's not exactly Mr. Popular among the hockey community at large. In a lot of quarters, he's probably despised. And I got to think that that's hurt his cause in the past. So, yeah, there is turnover on the committee. But a couple of things, guys. 18 to me is far too few in terms of the number of voters. I'd like to see a lot more voters. I mean, the Pro Hockey Writers Association, I turned in my ballot a week ago or 2 weeks ago. There's like 200 of us that get to vote on things like the Lady Bing and the Selke and the Masterton. No disrespect to those awards. That's not the Hall of Fame. You're putting these monumental decisions in the hands of 18 people, and then you're guaranteeing them complete anonymity and secrecy. We don't know what the final votes were. We never hear the reasons why somebody got in or they didn't. And to me, especially when you see guys like Kevin Lowe and so many members of say that the Oilers, and I know a lot of Leafs have got in, and it just creates the impression, I guess, that, you know, it's more like who you know at times than anything else, than what you did.
17 men, one woman. I think there's a little bit of a disparity there as well that they could certainly rectify, and they should do so immediately. They don't have to wait on ceremony for that disparity to be rectified.
For sure. I'll say this.
She's the one.
Guys, there's a lot of Manitoba connections actually to the current voting committee. Yeah. Mark Chipman, I believe this was his first year on it. I think it's a 3-year term, right? And then you rotate out. So this is Mark Chipman.
Isn't he the head of the committee now? I could be wrong on that, but I thought that when he joined it, he almost joined it as the head.
Bobby Clark is on it.
Yeah. McDonald's the head group.
Oh, okay. And Anders Hedberg, of course, former Winnipeg Jet, WHA Jet, is also on the committee. So, I mean, I think the concept of it is good. Like, you've got a mix of, you've got former players, guys like Luke Robitaille, Yeri Curry. By the way, do you think Yeri Curry voted for Kevin Lowe?
Igor Larionov is on there. Yeah.
Igor Larionov, right? Ken Holland, I'm sure, got some love. But yeah, so you've got, you know, I like the concept, and you've got some distinguished media, guys like Bob McKenzie right now, Michael Farber, Pierre Maguire is on it. And then, of course, you've got executives, David Poile, Brian Burke, or former executives in his case, and Mark Chipman. So I think the mix is good. I just like to see a bigger group and bigger numbers voting. And then I'd like to be able to know what the final votes were. Like, how close did somebody come?
I think Kevin Lowe getting into the Hall of Fame, the person that benefits the most from that is Winnipeg Jets assistant coach Charlie Huddy. I think he's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Let's put Andy Moog should go in. Let's keep it going. You know, Mark Lamb, he scored that overtime winner against the Jets. Put him in the Hall of Fame. If he donned a jersey for the Oilers in the 80s. Bill Ranford, let's put Bill Ranford in. Come on, this is getting a little silly is all I'm saying.
Hey, but in all seriousness, though, I mean, Mike, if you ask these guys, you know, here, we did a whole segment on this 2 or 3 years ago. You know, I'm with you. I've been vocal on social media for Theo for years, and I realize, you know, some of the stuff he puts out there on Twitter, right. You know, his political views, stuff like that. As far as I'm concerned, I don't care about that. I mean, we're talking about his accomplishments on the ice, his accomplishments off the ice, as you mentioned, you know, everything that he went through. The off-ice stuff is almost as impressive, you know, with his motivational speaking, you know, his battles with, you know, drug abuse, alcohol abuse. So he should absolutely be in the Hall of Fame. And I don't think anybody, you know, on our show at least, is going to disagree with you about the need for more people on the committee. You know, it might need to be as many as, you know, 30 people, I don't know, 40 people. There needs to be transparency, as you said. But, you know, I think what was maybe lost in yesterday's announcement was, you know, Jerome Iginla and Marian Hossa, who I think we would all agree, you know, deserve to be in as first ballot Hall of Famers. And I agree with you, Mike. I don't think it was the strongest class. And, you know, you've got a lot of, you know, future Hall of Famers that are going to be retiring in the next few years. We know the names Yager, Thornton. I mean, I think Patty Marleau should be a first ballot Hall of Famer. You know, you've got Roberto Luongo coming up, guys like that, right? So it wasn't the strongest class, but absolutely. I don't think, you know, the Hall of Fame committee is ever going to get it right. But I just think it's really difficult to argue against Theo Fleury. Like you said, 15 players, point a game in the regular season and playoffs. So it's probably just a matter of time before he gets in.
Named Chris Thorburn, who announced his retirement this week as well. You know, if Chris Thorburn played for the 1980s Edmonton Oilers, he probably would be in the Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah, I look forward to Dave Semenko's induction speech in a couple of years. Mike McIntyre, our guest on the Illegal Curve Zoomcast, Thursday evening we're recording this. It'll be posted, available on illegalcurve.com Friday afternoon sometime there, right, Dave Minuk?
Hopefully, Friday morning maybe.
There you go. Go ahead, Dave.
Mike, bringing it back to the Jets. Question for you.
Yeah.
Paul Maurice was just on the Rink podcast, an NHL podcast, talking about a variety of topics. And one of the things he was asked about was Brian Little. And so he basically, I mean, Brian Little's been out since November 5th when he was hurt in that game, you know, against New Jersey Devils. And then he had surgery. And, you know, we've been waiting to hear kind of an update. And again, he was asked about it. And it sounds like there's still more tests next month. So now, and of course, there's no date on that, right? So next month could be July 1st. It could be end of July. But if you're betting, and the Jets have, let's say, 28 guys that are going to be in this expanded, we don't know if it's going to be 28, 32, whatever. But right now, Kevin Sheldayoff talked about 28. They've already got, I think it was like 16 forwards, 17 if Little's one of them, and 10 defensemen.
Yeah.
Is your bet that Brian Little is one of those forwards, or do you think he's not playing in the play-in?
I think there's almost no chance he's playing against the Calgary Flames in the best of five play-in round. I wouldn't bet against him, you know, if the Jets could keep it going for a while and maybe go deep, working his way into shape. But, you know, they're talking about a two-week camp here, guys. It's not a lot of time to get up and ready. I realize a lot of time has now passed between when players will have last played a game, but Brian Little hasn't played, you know, since November. Like, we're talking about, by the time August rolls around, you know, that's 9 months. That's a long time. And to just throw a guy in, you know, I don't see it. And I think that, you know, he was obviously skating with the Jets just leading up to the pause, but he wasn't doing anything really intense. I think it was more about having him around the team. Brian Little is a great leader. He's a great voice. The guys love having him around. And as the Jets were kind of in that big push towards the end, having Brian Little just on, you know, around the team was a very positive thing. I never got the sense he was close to being able to return. And I think this summer has now confirmed that, or what we've heard, right? That no, he wasn't anywhere close to being ready to return, not with the various hurdles. So, I know he was actually on a CTV's morning show today, Thursday morning. That was part of so just to make it clear, guys, we've asked to talk to Brian Little many times. We asked actually again on Thursday. We were told no, because that was a that was like a paid sponsorship for the hospital foundation is what Brian Little was doing. He's a spokesman, and he wasn't really he was asked a general question, I think, about his health. Said that he's feeling good and he's like everybody else, just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. But no, I don't get the sense that he's ready to return. I think he will be a very active participant in training camp for sure. But I think with so many other options at his disposal, it really mitigates the need to, even if you felt like you wanted to try and rush him, you don't need to, right? You added Cody Eakin, who looked like he was really starting to play well just before the pause. So you have a lot more depth now than you did. In fact, you have the deepest lineup at any point in the season. The Jets were just getting healthy, and they're going to be even deeper now when they return. So I wouldn't bet on Brian Little playing, though.
You know, Mike, speaking of Cody Eakin, you know, we talked about how no Jets are in town right now. Cody Eakin's from Winnipeg. I was under the impression that he was in Winnipeg. Do you have any idea why he's not here? Is it just because he might be maybe back in Vegas?
Yeah, I don't know exactly where he is, guys. If he did go back to Vegas, I believe he may have been in actually Northwestern Ontario for a while at the beginning, maybe as a cottage or something out there. I'm not sure. But my understanding is he's not in town. And, you know, he'd be an interesting guy to hear from, right, for a few reasons. He's a UFA. And I got to wonder, if you're a UFA, especially as a I mean, he's not old, but he's a bit of an older guy. He's got some mileage on him, right? How concerned is he about, you know, and the idea of returning to play to try and salvage the rest of this season to preserve maybe a bit higher cap, say, for next year versus just wiping everything out entirely and what that might mean for salaries? Like, if you're a UFA this summer, which now may be this fall, I got to think there's extra motivation to make sure the league is taking in as much revenue as possible in any way, shape, or form, because that may ultimately be the difference between the next contract you get and how big it is, or maybe not getting a contract at all, maybe having to play on a 1 year or almost like on a tryout offer. So it's a tough time to be an unrestricted free agent, especially one who's got some years under his belt for sure.
I think the next couple of weeks are going to be fascinating to that point. Mike McIntyre, columnist for the Winnipeg Free Press, covers the Jets, a good friend of our program. Mike, always appreciate your time, and thank you for joining us on the Illegal Curvecast on this Thursday evening. And really appreciate you joining us, and hopefully we'll be able to see you in person again sometime soon. Not sure when that's going to be exactly, but that's exactly the scenario. But hopefully in person rather than on Zoom.
But that's a golf course, Mike.
Yes, indeed. Actually, next week we're going. Me, Jay Bell, Kenny Wiebe, and Scott Billick are actually playing around together.
The beat writer round.
Yeah. So we're actually playing out at Granite Hills, which will be a lot of fun. I think
I Kenny assume our invite just got lost in the mail. What happened?
I was just gonna say. I mean, Jason Bell knows this. I mean, my wife's family has a cottage, near Bird River, which is about 20 minutes from Granite Hills. So there might be room for one more. I might have to weasel my way in there.
You might have to indeed, guys. Yeah, next Tuesday. I think Kenny Wiebe has to give us all a few strokes. I think he's up to about 20 rounds already this spring. So
don't worry, he'll tweet about it. We'll see it on Twitter.
I just want to witness Bayak, a hole in.
Mike, I was going to say Dennis Bayak had a hole in one recently.
Like today or yesterday. We'll see how that goes, but should be a fun day. But look forward to seeing you guys real soon. You bet. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Mike. Mike McIntyre, the Winnipeg Free Press. There he goes.
I want Mike to know, I'm not going to look to go to some bourgeoisie golf course with you. I'm very happy at KP, Mike.
Sounds good. See you guys.
North end through and through, Dave. Take care, Mike. Thanks again.
Bye, Mike.
Alrighty, there goes Mike McIntyre, the Winnipeg Free Press, on the Illegal Curvecast. I want to, before we move forward, do some final thoughts. I apologize. I don't think I realized that Dave Semenko passed away a couple of years ago. So I may have been a little glib with my comment regarding him getting into the Hockey Hall of Fame. No disrespect intended. He obviously had a tremendous NHL career. And so if anybody takes any offense at my comment, it was certainly not intended to be offensive in any way, shape, or form.
Honest mistake, Drew. I mean,
when I mean to be offensive, you guys will know that because it's usually directed at one of you two. But to the Semenko family, in case they happen to be listening to the Curvecast, there was no intention on my part to be offensive in any way, shape, or form. I mean, my face is pretty offensive, but that's what comes with, with the video. Yeah. Final thoughts, guys. We've been rambling incoherently for almost about an hour now. So final thought to you, Ezzy, and then to Dave, and then I'll wrap it up. Anything on your mind? Well,
I mean, we have to end it with, what's happened in at the beginning of the Curvecast. I mean, it looks like the vote is now not only about, the return to play phase 3 and 4, but it's about the next CBA, and specifically, Drew, as you talked about, and you articulated the escrow, right? And I mean, we're going to be talking about Artemi Panarin's tweet for a while. I mean, that's not going to go away. I mean, Ryan Kesler, isn't going to play, obviously, in the playoffs, because not only did the Ducks not make it, but, he's injured. But
his career Kesler's probably over. Nothing.
But Panarin, guys, you're talking about a guy who, is a legitimate Hart Trophy candidate. He's a superstar, right? So, I mean, that tweet, him talking about how, the NHL, the NHLPA, they need to fix escrow. I mean, that's going to be something that we're going to have to watch here. But, I mean, we're going to obviously find out, who the hub cities are going to be. Pierre LeBrun reported it's most likely going to be next Monday or Tuesday. So by the next time we do our Curvecast, we'll know who it's going to be. Vegas and Toronto, or Vegas and Edmonton might be, somebody else. But we're expecting it to be at least one city being Vegas. So You know, there's a lot of more information that's going to come out here. But as we talked about, guys, training camp starts in, you know, just about 2 weeks, right? So, you know, I guess we're going to see hockey pretty soon, even though there are no Jets currently here in Winnipeg. But, yeah, there's still a lot of questions that have to be answered. It seems like, Drew, we talk about this, you know, every week, but there definitely are more questions than answers right now.
There certainly are. Dave Minuk, a final thought from you on this Thursday edition of the Illegal Curve Curvecast.
Nothing really significant. I mean, I just think, like, it's, you know, it's a good discussion we've had tonight, and I think that the fans can look forward to some more Jets Moose news on a little site called IllegalCurve.com coming up this weekend. More from my conversation with Pascal Vincent last week. So we'll have that on the site.
We got the draft lottery tomorrow. We're going to find out.
Draft lottery tomorrow.
First overall pick. So, I mean,
which, by the way, we haven't even talked about it, but think about it. What happens if they don't have a season? So does that not impact things slightly?
You know, I read something about that today, and there was different suggestions. I think Bob McKenzie had a great Twitter thread.
To go back to 2005, when after the lockout to have all 31 teams have a chance, stupid.
Why is it stupid? Think about the chaos.
I tell you why it's stupid, because I don't think a team that's really good should have a chance to get the first overall pick. I don't care. I honestly don't care if it's a 0.01% chance. There's a 0% chance, 0% chance that a good team, a Tampa, a Boston, a Toronto, any Vegas, any of these teams deserve a number one pick.
That's where you and I differ, my friend, because 100%. I embrace chaos.
No,
I want things to be as chaotic as possible.
Law and order, law and order.
You've been part of the show for 11 years, so obviously you embrace chaos.
Look, my dream come true will be if they vote on this return to play and the collective bargaining agreement and the players vote no. I can't tell you how happy that would make me if the players voted no and everything got blown up. Just because it would be so entertaining. There'd be so much controversy. There'd be so many people, you know, screaming from the rooftops. Embrace the chaos.
Is that the new slogan for Illegal Curve, by the way?
It should be. Embrace the chaos should be our. It should be our logo. It should replace Fueled by Hate, and you know, embrace the chaos. That's what I want. I want chaos. I want this whole thing to. I mean, I'm on the record of saying I don't think we should be doing this anyways. But so might as well let the whole thing blow up. Let them go back to the drawing board. Let everybody throw, you know, paper up in the air and their plans. Let them dissolve in front of us and watch the chaos unfold.
I'm predicting that Ottawa gets the first overall pick, boys. Put it on the board.
Well, way to go out on a limb when they have 25% chance. They're going ahead.
I mean, Detroit has the best odds at 18.5%, but
Ottawa's got two balls. Ottawa's odds combined are 25%.
When you combine the odds, yes.
That's what they have. Is they have the second.
John Ginsberg, the mathematician, say who's got the best odds?
Yeah, well, Ottawa, baby. Alexis Lafreniere. Here we go.
I don't know. Cam Robinson said otherwise.
It's Alexis Lafreniere. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Anyways, that's it. That's enough from both of you. I'm sick of seeing Dave. I've had to look at your face for the last 4 hours. Nobody should have to do that.
I'm aware.
What's that? You're aware. I know. Okay. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Big thank you to Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press for joining us on this evening's edition of the Illegal Curve Curvecast. It'll be up available on illegalcurve.com. It'll be available wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be on YouTube. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. Get it sent to your device each and every week automatically. For my fine colleagues, thanks for listening to the Illegal Curve Curvecast.